to order. Do we have any more public testimony on the bill? I think Pollution Control wanted to speak on one issue. Is that correct? Mr. Kadalka, did you come up with any additional information for us on the way of Deputy Commissioner John Stein? Thank you, Commissioner, for coming in.
Welcome, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is John Stein. I'm a Deputy Commissioner at the Pollution Control Agency, and I was understand from the morning testimony there's some question about our concerns relative to the use of the term public waters in a portion of the limiting of the state's authority to regulate certain activities. So I came at the advice of Mr. Kadalka to respond to those questions. So if I could just hear what, if any, of the questions were that you want me to respond to, and if not, I can certainly just speak a little bit to our concerns.
Well, Commissioner, it's on page R14. If you have a copy of the side by side, and where we're hanging up here is a definition, and in the bill it says public waters, and it's our understanding on the national level it's waters of the United States, and so we're trying to figure out just where all, and I think the department's suggestion was to go with waters of the state, and so we're trying to figure all this out. And really, Commissioner, you know, some of us are farmers around the table here. We want to do the right thing, but we don't want our neighbors to come over and put some statute in front of us that we passed here today and get the neighborhood all in an uproar, because we're peace-loving people out there. And so that's our challenge right now, to figure out if we go to public lands or waters of the United States or a combination of both, or waters of the state, or just that's where our misunderstanding is here.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I'm sure Mr. Knopf has probably informed you already, the definitions of public waters and waters of the state are found in Chapter 103G. And the Pollution Control Agency's responsibility under Chapter 116 is to assure the quality of waters of the state. That's the overall responsibility of the Pollution Control Agency as part of our mission and the authority of the Commissioner.
And Commissioner, I just point out to the members, I think you've got a copy here of the Statute 103G, 0.005. That the commissioner is referencing.
So just, you know, and as background for the committee members, prior to coming to the Pollution Control Agency, I worked this most recent 6 years at the Minnesota Department of Health as assistant commissioner and also the director of the Environmental Health Division. Prior to that, for 25 years, I worked for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources as a hydrologist and assistant division director dealing with the regulations associated with public waters. So I wouldn't call it drawing the short straw back at the office, but it was sort of the relevant subject matter from my history to come and speak to these definitions on behalf of the agency. Waters of the state, first of all, waters of the U.S. is what the Clean Water Act uses. It's a term that is simply and very broadly defining waters, any and all waters of the U.S. It's very restricted in terms of how those definitions are interpreted. Generally, they require some regulatory action of the federal government or some lawsuit that gets contested to make a conclusive definition of waters of the U.S. The definition for waters of the state is found there in subdivision 17 of Chapter 103G.005. It includes surface or underground waters, except surface waters that are not confined but spread and diffused over the land. You might think of that as stormwater runoff and puddles and various very ephemeral things that happen in very unpredictable ways only after rainfall events or spring snowmelt events. Waters of the state then would include things that would include the traditional lakes, rivers, streams, wetlands that are more permanent features on the landscape that are defined by specific hydrologic soils or vegetative characteristics that can be interpreted from observation either currently or from historical evidence. Public waters then is a subset of waters of the state. And public waters were those waters of the state that were defined by a public water inventory process of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources that was carried out from 1977, plus or minus, where the original start of the public water inventory process through the early to mid-1980s. And it was a process of going across the state and identifying all the features, all of the waters of the state, which of them met the definition in Subdivision 15 for public waters. The DNR then went forth and mapped those and listed them specifically, and those maps and lists are now found on the DNR's website and in every county courthouse around the state. So they are a very prescriptive subset of waters of the state. Thanks. With regard to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's responsibilities to assure the quality of waters of the state, our concern about the language of the bill is that the term utilization of the term public waters is really a subset of those waters of the state. And I did ask my friends at the DNR, I still have a few over at the DNR, to just remind me of the facts. Public waters are comprised of 21,539 basins. They are type 3, 4, and 5 wetlands, greater than 2.5 acres in municipalities or 10 acres in unincorporated areas, as well as lakes that meet that same size criterion. And then streams that have definable beds and banks that have a watershed area greater than 2 square miles. And so outside that, there are many other water resources, many other wetland types, many other shorter streams and smaller watershed streams and waterways that comprise waters of the state. And then, of course, if you look at the definition of waters of the state in Chapter 103G, Subdivision 17, it also includes groundwater resources. But since we're dealing with the application of pesticides in this particular provision of the bill, we're not concerning ourselves with the application of pesticides to groundwater. However, it is a part of our consideration when we look at the impacts of application and those the consequence on groundwater resources. So when we look at this term Section 7 of the bill, and it states that the agency, no other agency other than the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, shall regulate or require permits for application of pesticides unless the site includes public application of public waters. That means that there would be other areas, water resource areas in waters of the state that would not be subject to our regulation. Currently, that's something that we've been addressing through the development of a general permit. And we believe, as a result of our guidance from the U.S. EPA, that other states are beginning to implement such measures to fulfill the requirements of the federal law for assuring water quality outcomes. And that's our intention as well, is to develop a general permit that would fulfill that purpose. So with that, Mr. Chair, maybe I'll stop talking and answer questions that you or the committee members may have.
Well, Commissioner, I notice in the in the waters of the state in the Subdivision 17 here that you've got wetlands in here and the various type of wetlands. And I guess we had a question arise this morning that if we get a 2 or 3 inch rain out there, and you know the wetlands are determined by the Farm Service Agency. All of us that have farms out there got a little red dot on some of this land, whether it's a wetland or not, but that's what some genius in Washington has figured out to be a wetland. And so then if we get a couple inches of rain, and then the issue came up this morning, we're going along in the summer here when we need to spray, and there's water out there in a couple of these wetlands. But, you know, if you've got soybean aphids that are doubling in population every 2 or 3 days. That's an immediate concern. We've got to get this stuff done, and you don't have time to wait for the water to go down. Then how do we regulate that? How is this going to be regulated under this under your scenario here?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask one of our staff people to come up and assist in their answer that of that question. But let me just say we intend to implement a general permit that would cover those sorts of circumstances in which the application is required to fulfill a purpose which you described, which is control of pests in a cropped wetland situation. So I'll let you go forward.
Thank you. My name is Elise Doucette. I'm a permit writer for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and John was correct that control of pests in a cropped wetland would not require permit coverage. We also exempt agricultural stormwater runoff and irrigation return flow under the Clean Water Act, specifically exempt, and the MPCA under this permit is attempting to cover discharges that result in a discharge to waters of the state, and at this time, that does not include agriculture. It isn't our intent to cover agriculture under this permit. Many of the pesticides used to control aphids are terrestrial-labeled pesticides, so this permit would not cover that activity.
Well, I think the question we have in front of us is without the language you've got in the bill, you could do whatever your suggestions. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question right now, you said this doesn't fall into this criteria. Is that a department policy? Has it been established in rule? Where is that? Could we look at that? Is that written down?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this decision to create a pesticide general permit was a result of a Sixth Circuit court decision. And so it's National Cotton Council versus EPA. Language in that court decision was then taken by EPA, and they created a general permit that would cover states that don't have authority or tribal lands, territories in the United States. So we've taken EPA's permit, and we are using it as a template for development of our state permit. So the language is in the court decision and then subsequent EPA documents.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nino, I think right now it's a draft permit. It's not. We're responding to the federal agency's direction and draft. We will. The deadline for having something in place, I'm going to let Ms. Doucette respond to, but we're still drafting the permit. We've been working with a number of entities and groups as we've drafted that document to get their input and feedback toward coming to our ultimate permit language, which sometime this fall, Ms. Doucette will give you the exact date.
Yes, thank you. It is a draft permit. We public noticed it in January of this year, and we received about 45 to 50 comments, and we've just finished responding to those comments. But during that period of time, the EPA was granted a extension of the mandate. So a permit does not need to be in place now until October 31st of 2011. So that's not for this season, but for next season a permit would need to be in place. So right now the permits are draft.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, I apologize if I missed this. My question was more about the specificity regarding the applicability of when this permit is going to be required. The chair gave us a particular example, and you said, well, really wouldn't apply there. Is that just a department policy, or is that something that's been determined in a rulemaking process? How is it that it doesn't apply? How has that been determined? Has that been written down? That was my question about the applicability and how that's been determined.
Okay.
Ms. Doucette.
Applicability of the rule to cropped wetlands. So I might want to hear that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I said, that language was taken from the Sixth Circuit Court decision, and EPA drafted their permit. And so the permit has the language in it. The language from the court case is that if a discharge is unavoidable, so EPA looked at what kinds of discharges of pesticides it was unavoidable that it would result in a discharge to waters. So that's where the language came from. Specifically in Minnesota, under Minnesota rules 7050.0222, specifically cropped wetlands are exempt from meeting water quality standards. And so we're not including cropped wetlands in this permit, and in our draft fact sheet, we have that documented.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the question that I think we're trying to get at here is could the agency expand its jurisdiction into, you know, the terrestrial application of pesticides? Is there any possibility of that under current law?
Mr. Chair and Representative Eakin, no. Under current law, the terrestrial application of pesticides is the purview of the Department of Agriculture, and that's what we support.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Eakin.
And so, I guess if, in fact, again, that's the case, then there's no possibility of – I know there was concern expressed earlier about agency creep, the agency expanding its jurisdiction. But according to your testimony, there's no possibility of that occurring under current law.
Chair, Representative Eakin, that is correct. My, you know, the interest that the agency has is that we do have a charge under Chapter 116 to assure the quality of the waters of the state for the people. We also know that there's a potential for release and discharge under the findings of this court's decision, the guidance of the EPA, and our own monitoring. Then we would look for the approaches that would be most successful in managing any releases to waters of the state. We feel that the general permit approach is the least impacting to get that job done.
Okay. I think Mr. Clavin has some points. While you're walking up, I'd ask both of you, do you anticipate any cost to the agency or any additional employees to implement these rules you're going to put in place in October of this year?
Mr. Chair, I'll answer that with some degree of ignorance because I don't know what may have been previously testified. I just came to the agency a few weeks ago. So from my point of view, if we had costs, we've already agreed to absorb them because we're doing the work. I don't know, though, if we've identified costs above and beyond that, and I'm going to look to Mr. Kadelka. He's shaking his head, and so I'm going to say no.
All right. Mr. Clavin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin again. I jumped up to try to answer Senator Nienau's question and Representative Eakins, and I can tell you the answer to both of them. You were wondering where it was written down, and you were wondering about the agency creep. The red flag came in the fact sheet that was put out with the draft rule, and I have it here. I'm at the bottom of page 9. Page 9 has three sentences on terrestrial pests. And it says, this permit does not cover the terrestrial application for purposes of controlling pests on ag crops, forest floors. The fact sheet does not address whether these would ever need an MPDS permit, nor does this identify every activity that could ever require a permit. And here's the key phrase for our concern. While this permit only covers the four use patterns mentioned above, those into the water that were described earlier this morning, the existence of this permit does not, by definition, obviate the need that an individual permit would be necessary if other types of applications result in a point source discharge to waters of the state. So you're out spraying the ditch bank with Roundup because you have a duty under the noxious weeds laws to keep the thistle down. And while drift and off-site applications we realize are illegal, if there's a trace amount of Roundup that winds up in the ditch bank, that would be under this language, a point source results in a discharge to waters of the state. So it's written there where our concern was, and the agency creep is right there. We'll get the program running. We'll get it set up for mosquitoes. There's four use patterns, and then one day we'll find Roundup somewhere, and we'll probably have to regulate it. Now, we don't know if it comes from spraying the thistles or if it came from the 80 acres of soybeans. We don't know where the Roundup came from. So we're going to have to pick up all the applications because there was a trace amount found in some water somewhere. That's what led to the bill. And it was that language in their fact sheet when we reviewed it that caused us that concern, because they left the door open to cover the terrestrials.
Okay. Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair. And,
okay. Come on up, pollution control. Go ahead, Representative Eakin.
And Mr. Clavin, you'd mentioned that it stated point source pollution or discharge. And so spraying could constitute or be defined as a point source? Is that that's possible?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Representative Eakin. That's actually what started this whole commotion was in the early 2000s. Somebody sprayed with an airplane, I think it was, in somewhere out west in the Ninth Circuit. And the nozzle was classified as a point source of pollution. That's what started the whole thing. We've been operating for 40 years under FIFRA and the Clean Water Act without permits for these. And the sprayer nozzle was defined as a point source. So the EPA said, and this is mid-2000s, they said, we're not going there. We are not going to try to do permits for all the sprayer nozzles. So they issued some guidance or some kind of rule where they declined to do this for all the pesticide applications. They got sued over that. They were ordered by the second court to go back and formulate a program that would address putting pollutants in through that point source. So the nozzle is the point source. And that's where they came up with this draft that then the PCA picked up this summer, and that's what's the four use patterns. When it goes into the water or over the water, pollutants delivered through a nozzle, and that's what needs coverage.
Okay. Commissioner Stein?
Mr. Chair, if I could just offer some comments in response to Mr. Clavin's statement. The agency is what he's referring to is a draft fact sheet, so I would say it's not in any way a final set of language for a permit. It's our fact sheet. We appreciate the feedback on that. We will, based on our internal conversations on how we would respond to the comments that have been made on our draft general permit, we would expect that applicators of pesticide for the control of noxious weeds would be exempted from applying for a permit, paying fees for a permit, and that they would be given some best practice guidance on how to apply those pesticides so that the control of noxious weeds can be accomplished without needing to go through an individual application process. That's the approach that we've decided to take in response to what the risk of water quality degradation may be, as well as what we think the needs of agriculture in the state are.
Further comments from anyone? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And to the PCA, you talk about permits and such. What would an average farmer have to do, or a co-op who is a custom applicator, in terms of additional permits to be covered under your potential language here?
Mr. Chair, sorry, I didn't see your name. Representative Szymanski, is that your name?
Anderson.
Apologize.
Anderson.
Excuse me, Representative Anderson. It would depend upon the actions that were being taken. An individual farmer that was going to be applying, it would depend on acreage, would depend on methods and so forth. I could ask Elise to respond to that in specific, but it would depend, I would say. The scope would depend upon the actions being taken. If there's a co-op that's got multiple farms that they treat, then it could be different, but it is going to depend upon the acreage being treated, the purpose that is being conducted, and so forth. But the vast majority of our efforts would be to allow specific actions under a general permit with as few individual applications for permit as possible.
Thank you. John is correct, and that there may be some farmers that are impacted by the permit, but the permit, once it finalized, will have automatic coverage, and those farmers it is very unlikely that they would exceed the threshold that we have listed in the permit. It wasn't our intent to have individuals, homeowners, landowners, be impacted by this permit, where they have to submit a notice of intent as well as the permit application fee. So we kept those thresholds at a level that we knew we would be controlling the largest of the applicators in the state.
Representative Anderson, you got it figured out?
Mr. Chairman, this is getting scarier as we go along here.
Well, I think, you know, Representative Anderson and, you know, members, I guess we keep talking about, you know, what we're doing now instead of what my worry is. If we don't do something here in the statutes, what's going to happen down the road here again, you know? That's a concern I've got, and pretty soon we've hired a bunch more folks, and then we got fines everywhere, and then I'm start getting calls from my neighbors. The pollution control drove by, and now I got a fine here. I got to go see. And the pollution control tells us to don't come up and tell us about it. Stay home. Well, it's our fine. It's our duty. Because I hear too much of that, Commissioner and Mr. Sitt. That's what I'm trying to avoid. See? Avoid any problems out here. So, Chairman Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the Commissioner, if this language is left in the bill as is, what would your advice be back to the governor as far as signing of the bill, passing of the bill?
Mr. Chair, it would require us to see the complete bill. I can't speak to what our advice will be until the full report we're out. Certainly, we have concerns about the language. We have concerns about constraining the authority of the agency. We would express those to the governor.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Schoenfeld wants to be recognized.
That's my cue.
Mr. Bond, come on.
Mr. Chairman, I just kind of would kind of like to bring it back to the committee a little bit. You've heard a lot about what the agency intent is or what the agency was willing to do in their permit or and so forth. I mean, it was all through their rules there and so forth. The reason this bill was put in the first place was not to see what the agency would allow. It was to see what you would allow. And the intent was to set the law as a preemptive thing so that the agency didn't even have to think about it in the future, that the statute would govern. And it seems we get a lot about, you know, what the permit that you're going to give, who's it cover, what's it cost, where's it go? And the point here was to set up an exemption, basically to say you shall not go there. And so I just kind of wanted to bring that back to you. To recognize that the bill was really from the standpoint of the legislature stating what the policy be, not what the agency state the policy to be.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenfeld. Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Conference Committee, my name is Bill Bond. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. Our association represents the agronomy portion of a co-op or the small retail egg retailer that's an independent. What we would suggest to the committee to consider is this, that FIFRA has been the governing law of applications of pesticides for many, many years. What this bill does is protect FIFRA from, and allow it to continue to be the statute that governs our applications. The NPDES permit will be yet another permit that does nothing more than what FIFRA is already doing. What you will be, by not putting this language on the bill, by taking the House position, unfortunately, you will be creating, we think, a general kind of a license for all of the ag retailers that do custom applications. And that will be a significant new permit for us that is on activity that's already covered by FIFRA. So we'd like to add that thought. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Bond? All right. Thank you, sir. Any other public testimony on the bill? Mr. Bond, I should ask you that while you're there. I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Speaking to the anhydrous ammonia public safety surcharge on page R15 of the comparison, lines 13.13 through 13.18. And then I'd also speak to the $400 reinspection fee on lines 13.24 to 13.27. If you were to hold this committee hearing at one of the facilities that applies anhydrous ammonia to farmland all across Minnesota, they would tell you that they are also very concerned about anhydrous ammonia. It's a very necessary form of nutrition for plants, and it's also one that can be very hazardous and dangerous and has caused injury and even death. As a result, we take it very seriously. In fact, about 3 years ago, when there was a sweep through the co-ops retailers of Minnesota, and it was pointed out that there were some real serious deficiencies in the way the safety handling of anhydrous, it was our association and the Minnesota Feed and Grain and the Cooperative Association that together, cooperating with the Department of Agriculture, that put on safety seminars, including on-site inspections and demonstrations to demonstrate how anhydrous was to be handled and how safety was to be made in those inspections. Since that time, we've worked very closely with the department, but there is something you need to know. It's not only the department that administers the safety and inspections for anhydrous. It's also the Minnesota Department of Transportation. It's also the U.S. Department of Transportation. It's also the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, the Highway Patrol. And those inspectors are all unique and different and can come on the property at different times. You add to that inspections by OSHA, PCA, EPA, and you have a collection of inspectors coming on facilities at different times, sometimes with conflicting rules, and you have a small agribusiness that feels overwhelmed. That said, we then said to our members, how would you handle this? And they asked us to create an audit that would list at least all of the rules from all these myriad of agencies. And out of that came a what we call stewardship program, which we have discussed with the department, and they've been very cooperative with us to provide a private sector stewardship program, which would be an audit, an external audit, that would then come up with a corrective action plan on all those areas that are out of compliance. And part of the requirement of the program that we're establishing is that they will come into compliance. The reason we did that is because of those myriad of inspectors. We feel that the department has been very cooperative with us. We've raised questions about not the safety inspections because they're necessary. What we've raised questions about is a 75-cent safety surcharge. We're not aware of another state that has such a safety surcharge on just anhydrous. And so this is a targeting to a specific form of plant nutrition that is setting somewhat of a precedent. That said, we have made suggestions on how we could work with the department to handle the inspections differently using other inspectors, and there are several thoughts we've advanced. But we would say to you that we would support the House position, which we think is a responsible position, and that the 75-cent surcharge, which will be line item and passed on to every farmer that we serve, would not necessarily be necessary. That said, we understand the department does not agree with us on this, nor does the governor as we understand it, but that would be our position. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if we could have Mr. Bozicki from the department come in to address this, and specifically address to the comments that were made by the testifier of the number of inspectors, not only within the department, but some of the other departments or entities, which Mr. Bond referred to.
Mr. Bozicki.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, again, Greg Bozicki, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The department currently has 1.7 FTEs working on anhydrous ammonia inspection, and these inspectors do a number of other things. They respond to emergency incidents releases, of which we have about 50 a year. They also work on permitting. They also work on other types of storage other types of anhydrous regulation of the large storage. And the net result is we do about, with this workload staffing level, 42 inspections a year. There's 295 facilities in the state that handle anhydrous ammonia. Currently, we're focused on those inspections, on those facilities that we haven't inspected for 4 or 5 years. So the rotation that we've been operating is too lengthy, we believe, for good compliance. As Mr. Bond said, anhydrous ammonia is dangerous. There's a high degree of respect out there for anhydrous ammonia, and I would submit that there's a number of folks actually are very concerned about how to go about doing some of the routine maintenance. And we hear stories that some facilities don't do much until the department shows up. And that's the kind of compliance assistance program we used to run a number of years ago. We've switched to a different type of program in which we do the inspection and then issue penalties. And that's simply because we don't have this number of staff to do the compliance assistance, which is much more time pressing. Mr. Bond is correct. Back in 2009, there were some saturation inspections. It was, to my knowledge, the only time this has happened in the state. My understanding, it was the Federal Department of Transportation that initiated these and worked with the Public Safety Department and also DOT. They went onto facilities in the southern part of the state in the spring and in the northern part of the state in the fall, and they covered a large number of facilities, something like 30 or 40 at a shot with teams of three. It was those inspections that led us to meet with those agencies. We have a good working relationship, and when we heard the results of those, that there was significant noncompliance in their view, we worked with the three agencies, the three organizations that Mr. Bond indicated, and we went about putting on some of the best workshops that we've ever put on in the past, that have been put on. So those that were very effective. Unfortunately, we still find noncompliance. We still find facilities who actually attended the workshops and still have significant noncompliance. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, the thought with this legislation was to do two things, two major things. One is to provide us resources to do additional inspections so we can catch up on some of these older facilities. We state in the legislation that we're going to really focus on, we're going to prioritize to those facilities that pose less risk. And then the other thing that we're going to do, the second major thing we're going to do, is to develop rules, to update our outdated rules, and to come up with some new rules that allow for the private inspection, certification of private inspectors to get more inspection services out there. Whether that be a retired inspector from Iowa that moves to the great state of Minnesota, or whether that is Mr. Bond's program, or whether it's someone else's program, the idea is to get more private inspectors out there and that could inspect these and certify to us that these facilities are in compliance with our standards. And that's the idea. The idea is to think outside the box, to do something a little bit different than anybody's tried before. And to do that, Mr. Bond is correct, the governor proposed a 75-cent per ton fee on anhydrous ammonia because anhydrous ammonia is the problem.
Okay. Chairman Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Buzicki, during committee, I questioned whether or not we would need the additional inspectors because we'd have, because of the rules that were changing or the legislation that we're looking forward to pass here, with being able to focus on the people that are in violation or the bad actors and not inspect the good ones as often, then I raised the question whether or not we would need additional inspectors because of that and because of some of the other entities that do these inspections as well. We all agree that it's dangerous, and we need to make sure that we have safety processes and protocols in place. And one other component that we need to take into consideration is that this is a major component in meth manufacturing as well. So we need to make sure that these are safe, properly stored, handled, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody disagrees with that. It's how do we get there? We had talked a little bit about, I raised the question or concern, if we have this fee put in place, it's ongoing. And as we develop, like you were talking about, the rules and having the private people that are trained in as well, my question was, if that's going to take place, that'll be a fee for service, then why do we need to have this continued ongoing fee on anhydrous additionally for long term? And I guess that's where you and I may have disagreed a little bit there. I'd like you to comment on that, and then I'd also, I believe we may have found, well, no, we're not there yet, Chairman, but eventually I think we might have found some workable solutions potentially as well. But if you could just comment on that,
please. Mr. Buzicki.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, yes, we had those discussions, and we looked over some of our estimates. I've talked with staff, so these are just simply estimates. My staff have informed me that we believe out of the 295 facilities, about 20% or 60 or so are in very good compliance, very good shape, but an equal number are still in poor compliance. The remainder are somewhere in between. They could be facilities that are improving, or they could be good facilities that are decreasing. But if you just remember that 60 number, as I previously stated, with our current staffing, we can do about 42 inspections with all the other work per year. So that's basically about 25 inspections per inspector. So with the additional one inspector that our legislation would provide, we would be able to do 67 inspections per year. That would kick us up to that. And at that rate, we'd be able to focus on more of those poor compliance ones. But we'd be at least incrementally making some progress, as opposed to doing only 42 when there's 60 bad ones out there, if my staff's estimates are correct. So we'd be falling behind, I guess. So that would be the need for the additional inspector, is to at least really focus our resources on those problem facilities. You're correct. The whole idea is to come up with a different risk assessment, so that we can stay away from the ones that are in really good shape and then focus on the lower ones and the ones that are in problem with compliance. The idea would be to take one of the positions and to develop rules, which take a long time. And we'd want these to be developed in such a way that the industry was at the table. And it will take 18 months to develop those rules. And then we would develop the rules, and hopefully we would have private inspectors, people who would be wanting to do this work on a fee basis without our involvement, just between the facilities and doing that inspections. We don't know if that would actually happen. Nobody's tried this before. I don't know if inspectors would be willing to go through the certification program. I don't know what that would be. That would be part of the rule process. But our thought is that if we can get that inspection services out there, while we're focusing on the problems that eventually, sooner rather than later, we'll actually turn this thing around and achieve safer anhydrous ammonia application. We are concerned about the number of injuries. This is very serious. And this is one way to try to, as I said, think outside the box to address the problem.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Buzicki, if collectively we all agree that safety is first and of the utmost importance, if we're able to find a workable solution with you for the next 2 years to where you can design this, developing the rules and work with the private inspectors, and then report back to us at the end of 2 years with an ongoing funding source and updating us on how this is all going. Maybe it's cross inspections or cross training of inspectors. Would that be a workable solution in your opinion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, yes.
Thank you.
All right, any other testimony? If not, we'll start going through the side-by-side here. I see no other people jumping up, so let's go ahead and start. And Mr. Knopf, you want to go through the, kind of lead us through the side-by-side?
So, Mr. Chairman, I think for the, since it's a Senate file that's in conference, we'll use the left side where they're the same, or we're just going to take the first two pages. You know, the numbers, of course, will reflect the spreadsheet, and you'll be dealing with that, I think, a little bit here. So we'll just basically take the left side on all the way through R3, and then I think we need to have, when you get to R4, there are some differences in members. I think you need to make motions or do something to figure out which side you want to take.
Okay, so members, we're on to page R4, and that's the first difference we have here in the language. So what we would do here is either have motions to change it, or we have a motion to take either the Senate or the House language, or both. We can do some changes to those. So first one we have is the top of page R4. So what are the members' wishes? Mr. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I'm clear then, everything up to the point that we're at, everything on R3 then, we have indeed adopted the Senate language. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, you may want to make a motion on that, but I think without anybody objecting to it, you can just consider it adopted as far as wherever they're the same.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll make the motion then to adopt the Senate language on page R3 from 2.21 through 3.8. Just so we're clear.
Okay. All righty. All those in favor? And any discussion?
Could you repeat that again?
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Representative Anderson asked for clarification. I make the motion to adopt the Senate language on page R3 from line 2.21 through 3.8.
Okay, any discussion? Motion to accept the Senate language on page R3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, well, now we're on page R4. Do we have suggestions on what language to take here? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we just have staff give us an update on the differences between the two once again, please? From lines 3.9 through 3.19.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the first difference you'll see on the House side, 3.9 to 3.10, says this is a one-time appropriation. Also on 3.16, the perceived shortfall, and the Senate does not use the word perceived, and then also the recommendations for fee changes to eliminate the shortfall in the bottom of the Senate. The other big difference, because they're not one time, you'll see that in the Senate spreadsheet, the 245 continues on until the next biennium, the 245 per year.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I would make the motion to adopt the Senate language from 3.9 through 3.19. And I do have an oral amendment.
State your oral amendment, Representative.
The oral amendment would adopt the House language that says this is a one-time appropriation. Okay. And that language is located, members, on line, starts on lines 3.9 and runs through 3.10 in the House language.
Okay. Any questions from the members? This basically takes the Senate language and makes it one-time appropriations. So. Discussion? If not, all those in favor of adopting the Senate language as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, that carries. Now, on to the bottom of page R4.
And Mr. Chairman, to highlight again, on 3.33, you have the word identify on the Senate side.
Yep. The only change. So the members, you want to add the word identify to promote the word identify, so you're saying that identify and promote Minnesota grown products. Representative Amir makes a motion to accept the Senate, that's the Senate language.
3.22 through 3.2.
Thank you, Representative. All those
to 3.22.
to 4.2, yep. Right. Except the Senate language okay. of identify and promote.
Thank you, Representative LeMire. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, that's approved. Mr. Knopf,
well, you have. Mr. Chair, you move on to R5, where the first part on the training for the county and town officials is the same, but you have the additional post provision on 4.1 through 4.13.
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eakin.
And I would like to move the House language 4.1 to 4.13, which does appropriate $100,000 each year for ag in the classroom. Excuse me. Oh, these are the demonstration grants. I'm sorry. I was looking at the
grants.
Yes. I would like to move that language to the permissive language, allowing $100,000 to be appropriated up to $100,000.
Okay. Any further discussion? So what we're doing is accepting the first sections of R5, and then Representative Eakin has a motion to accept the House language, basically all the House language on page R5, basically, is what
right.
we'd accept. Members, it's been brought to my attention that by some others that we do not specify any appropriation in here. I don't know if that's your desire, Representative Eakin, others, but I guess if you want to specify an appropriation of some money, I as a chairman would not oppose that some funding, but I don't think we can go to $200,000 a year of an appropriation. But I know they're putting in here $20,000 to disseminate the green book and that sort of thing. It would be my suggestion that we put in, say, amount of $50,000 over the two-year period, that we have some money in there, and if you get some matching grant money to come in, we can leverage this. We can at least get the green book out, get some projects going. Would you consider that a friendly amendment, Representative Eakin?
Well, and again, Mr. Chair, and you're talking about permissive language up to $50,000 is what you're...
Well, what I would say is we would appropriate $50,000, and we'll get to the spreadsheet at the end of the day here, but we'll appropriate $50,000 out of the fund and then up to the additional language, but up to $100,000 a year. But we would have this $50,000 specified. Right now, there's no money specified.
And, Mr. Chair, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Thank you, Representative Beacon. Okay, any further discussion? Does the staff have that language?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I need to be clearer on what you want to do. So you want to leave the up to $100,000 each year, but you also want to appropriate a specific $50,000, and I don't know that that's reflected yet in the spreadsheets.
It's not in the spreadsheet yet, so that's just a suggestion I would have.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think what you'd want to do is, if you did that, you'd want to say $50,000, is for grants for farmers for demonstration projects, and then you would say an additional $150,000 over the biennium may be used, if you're trying up to
$150,000, yeah. If the department got grants in or whatever. They would be at this. That language would allow them to use that to spend it on. Does that make sense? Well, I guess the question is where we get the $50,000.
That's right.
And
Senator Nino,
just a clarification. I understand the $50,000 per year appropriation. Are you also changing the 100 to 150 to include that appropriation then?
We would the way the council is suggesting is that we would have $50,000 in there as appropriation and then an additional one of up to $150,000.
Okay.
If we had grant monies come in, so but at least we would have $50,000 designated for sure that they have, and if they get more grant money to come in, fine, we'll go with that then. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we had heard testimony on this about having this language as a placeholder, and that if the grants did come in, they could issue those up to $100,000. And I believe that what you were
referring to initially is to make sure that right now it could be zero, it could be 100,000. And I think the point that you're making is you wanted a minimum of 50,000. Is that correct?
Okay. My question, Mr. Chair, maybe this would be to staff, is if they had that minimum requirement in here, one, would it throw this out of balance, or two, where would we find those dollars to allocate specifically to this? Or I guess a third question would be, could we still obtain what Chairman's trying to accomplish without having a specific requirement?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton, there's fiscally, I'm thinking about, there's a couple ways of doing this. Either we could directly, when we get to the spreadsheet, put $50,000 for this purpose and make, you know, a bigger reduction to Agri or something else to keep it balanced, or we could appropriate, merely put a rider in there for $50,000, and it would come out of the department's operating funds that go towards this area. This would just force them to do $50,000 worth of grants out of the money that they already have allocated for this type of programming. So it depends on if you want to offset the $50,000 with a bigger reduction somewhere else, or just have the department do $50,000 worth of grants with the money that's already in the base for this area. Because I believe they have some money for programming for sustainable farming, but they just never had any allocated specifically for grants. And I don't know how much they had in their base that was just for a sustainable ag program.
$100,000.
I mean, maybe they can come up and add. But so there's sort of two ways of going at it. Either give them an extra $50,000 and make a reduction somewhere else, or say out of the money you're already getting for this type of program, at least $50,000 has to be for grants.
So we have the department come up and tell us what's going on here. Scott here and Commissioner Borbom, you haven't been up yet.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You understand the question, or the struggle we're having here is where to do this. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think I do. Just to make sure, I'm Greta Gothier, Department of Agriculture. What I think you're saying is that the options you're considering are either to make a $50,000 appropriation and find the money elsewhere outside of our operating budget from the funds that are in this conference committee's purview, or to have us take the $50,000 out of our base operating budget. And am I correct in understanding those are the two options? Yeah. Okay. Well, I would be here to tell you that we don't have any. The funds that are in this, our operating budget, are used to pay salaries for the staff that oversee the program. So if we had to take the money out, we would not have staff to oversee the program.
I'm sorry. Sidebar here with
go ahead, Jim.
Mr. Borbom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Borbom, Deputy Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And as Greta just testified, that we do have funds in our base, general fund monies in our base for sustainable and organic agriculture purposes. Those funds are completely dedicated to staff costs and to building, operating, or program costs. So if the option was to take $50,000 out of our base, we would be looking at trying to look at some reduction in staff to cover that obligation.
Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've heard the testimony here, and I think, and I want your feedback on this as well. I think that what I heard from the testimony is people were wanting to take the House position on this that states up to 100,000, and I understand what the chairman's trying to do to have
actual dollars allocated. The testimony that we heard, I thought that folks were okay with this language, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. We're okay with this language in the event we had federal money come in or outside money that came in, then we'd have the language that would allow the department then to pass that through specifically for this. So does the House language, gets my specific question, does the House language, do you think, does it address what the testifiers were hoping for today, and does this address what the department would like to accomplish as well, the House language as it sits today?
Mr. Barbo?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the House language is permissive. It does allow us, I mean, if there were federal funds available or matching funds from some other source, it would allow us to proceed or to offer this type of capacity.
You better explain the discussion we're having here.
Mr. Chairman, based on the last comments from the witnesses, the concern I have is the way this is worded, it says up to $100,000 each year may be used for grants. When you say $100,000 without specifying what fund it's from, it means general fund. So the way this is worded, it only means general fund. It has nothing to do with federal funds or gifts or donations to the department. Those are under separate authority. This only applies to the general fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Would you have recommendations then? Would you have recommendations on a oral amendment to accomplish what it is that we're trying to accomplish so that it's inclusive of the other funds?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you don't want them to use, I mean, it sounds like they don't want to use any general fund for this. And because there's not room for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Knopf makes a point, as I understand it, that you're right. We would apparently not be able to use federal money unless you change the language here. However, just to reiterate that if we do have an economic uptick in the next few, half a year, few months, whatever, and we are able to do a small supplemental budget next year, we would want to keep the permissive language just in the case that there might be general fund money available. But we would, I think, be amenable to whatever input you may desire in terms of amending the language so that we would also be able to accept federal grants, gifts, et cetera.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Gauthier, as I understand it, I mean, federal funds come to the state all the time. Mr. Ernest could probably talk about this. There's a statutory appropriation for federal funds, and generally for gift. I think you should have a gift fund statutory appropriation, too. And so that money is already appropriated to you when you get it. And maybe Mr. Ernest,
Ernest, do you want to explain that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the agency's federal fund appropriation is in our Chapter 17 specific to the agency, and we do have the authority to take those federal funds for the purposes for which the federal government appropriates them. If they gave them for this purpose, this language, no language in this bill would be needed. The intent of this rider here was to apply to this section, this general fund appropriation for this program, that should things change and some of this general fund were available within our spending plans and our budget, that we would say that we may use some of it for this grant program.
Yeah, that's true.
Goth here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I guess the bottom line is, you know, times are kind of in flux generally in this country right now with the economy. There are a lot of things in the air, so to speak, balls in the air, and this would just allow us to have some flexibility if at some point in the future there were some general fund dollars available, then we have this flexibility.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the discussion. Representative Eakin, if you recall, in the discussion of the House, this is, and correct me if I'm wrong to the agency folks, this is the governor's recommendation that we adopted from lines 4.1 through 4.13. And from the testimony, I, with all due respect, I would, I guess I would ask if you could withdraw the motion, the original motion, and the amendment, the friendly amendment as well. And then I would, whether you move it or not, just move the original language from lines 4.1 through 4.13 based on the testimony that we heard. And once again, this is the governor's language that we do have in the House bill. And if someone would like to comment on that, if I'm wrong, please correct me.
Okay. And Mr. Senator Chair, Beacon. And I understand that is what the governor recommended as well. I do think that it's awfully, I guess, it hits him awfully hard, obviously, just zeroing out the demonstration grant program here. So that's why I would, if it's at all possible, it would be nice to actually have an appropriation of the $50,000. Given the situation and the circumstances that the Ag Department is facing, I mean, there's a possibility of finding it elsewhere within the budget here later. I don't know if the chair has any ideas as far as where that money would come from.
I have an idea.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's one entity in the House side that has not taken any reduction. That may be a possibility, Representative Eakin.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I know that there's money also in the AGRA, and I don't know if the AGRA funds could be used for purposes like this grant program the way it is, but I'm thinking that that would be a possibility.
Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chair, just for members, a point of clarification. This bill does not zero out sustainable ag grants. Those grants were zeroed out. Last year,
so 2 years ago.
Either last year or 2 years ago through lobbying. So this bill, Representative Eakin, you just wanted to make sure everyone understood. You said to zero them out. It implied this bill was zeroing them out. This bill does not do that.
Okay. Well, Representative Eakin, what's your wishes?
Well, at this point, I guess I will remove the motion with the friendly amendment, and I would just move then the House language okay. as it stands.
All right, thank you. Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to, I mean, another suggestion would be to make it real clear on 4.1 after a year insert of this appropriation, so $100,000 each year of this appropriation that refers to the subdivision that it's in the total appropriations.
That we should do that probably.
Mr. Chair, would Mr. Reinholz like to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, what I heard was just adding subdivision 3, or you're saying that rider does just apply to this subdivision when it's underneath it, but that certainly doesn't hurt anything to add that clarification.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reynolds, I wasn't referring to actually putting in, but just say of this appropriation. So it's clear to people that we're not talking about federal funds or anything like that. We're talking about just the money that's in this subdivision.
Mr. Chair, I agree there. That would make no difference in the application right. of this.
Okay. Representative Eakin, that's a friendly amendment.
I would agree.
Okay. All right, members. We have the motion that we accept the House language as amended on page R5. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That's approved. Page R6, we have the language in here. I think that's different. It's the $100,000 each year for the Ag in the Classroom, Ag Literacy Programs. What's the committee's wishes? Senator Deems.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we accept the House language on 524 to 531 on the Ag in the Classroom.
Okay, Senator Deems, and you want to take that funding then basically from the Agri Fund?
I think you would have to do that.
I think that's what we'd have to do, Chairman. All right, so any further discussion on that?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think what you'll want to do is he'll move both riders, or all the riders on the House side, from 4.32 to 5.31.
Right. Is that your motion, Senator right. Deems? All right. And we're clearing the funding then? We're tracking along with the spreadsheet. All right, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, that passes. R7. We've got some numbers in here we were talking about over the break here that maybe we want to discuss. Mr. Reinholz and Mr. Mueller, one of you. If you want, yeah, we could pass out the spreadsheet. Yeah, we've got an additional spreadsheet, members. We've had a couple issues come up, so we needed to move some of this money around, members. So
thank you.
The Ag in the Classroom was one, and another one was the Center for Rural Policy and Development, another House provision that we have. So we need to change some of the numbers here in the on page R7 and R8.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sullivan, was there an amendment put together to do that very thing, to address some of the changes in the bill? Has that been passed out yet?
Yeah, it's passed. That doesn't relate to this, so. Yeah.
Oh. 280.
Yeah, but it's not in.
Oh, but.
Right.
You did a spreadsheet, you know, but you have.
It's on. It's
on. I thought you would come back. Five hundred changes.
Oh, there's.
No, we were going to do that. We don't need one. We don't need an amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, for right now, as we have fiscal staff working on the appropriate numbers, I believe it would be in line, and I'd move the Senate language excluding the dollar amounts. So on lines 5.15, the $13,732,000, excluding that for right now, and staff correct me, just leave that blank for right now for my motion. And then on lines 5.29, that $3 million. Again, leave that blank. My motion would be to accept the Senate language from 5.15 through 6.20. With the appropriations blank.
And Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Knopf.
I think you may also want to include, there's language that rider that continues on the next page on 6.36. Then there's also the Agri program language and then the Lake of the Woods County. I don't know if you want to do that all in one motion.
Yes.
Without the money.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion on. Continuing on page R8, 6.21 through 7.10.
7.14.
1.4.
Okay, so, 7.14. Adopt the Senate language without the appropriation. Leave that blank on lines 7.1. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Everyone understand the motion? Basically, the motion is to accept the Senate language on page R7 and on page R8. except that we are not putting in the money at this time. We have further motions that we additional motions we're going to consider later on. These dollars will change as a result of the motions passed in the family. So,
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Hamilton.
Okay,
we have the motion in front of us. Does everyone understand this? And again, we'll track it along with the spreadsheet. We'll come back to these numbers. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And visiting with staff, I'd make the motion to adopt the budget language, the budget spreadsheet here, and ask staff to put in these numbers accordingly once we're done. And if Mr. Reinholtz would like to clarify that motion, that way they can help. Okay, very well. I withdraw my motion.
Thank you, Representative. All right, page R9. Language is similar, except that the House language adds the ranking member to the report here. I think it's a good idea. Who wants to offer that motion?
I will, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson, you'll move the House language then for page R9.
That's correct,
basically,
Mr. Chair.
That adds the ranking members to the report. I think it's a good idea. Representative Anderson does too, so he offers the amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. All right. Page 10 is the same. So someone want to offer an amendment or offer one side or the other, either one?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we adopt the Senate language on page R10,
right,
lines 8.7 through 8.31.
All right. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor of said motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, motion carries. R11.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
I'd move that we adopt the Senate language on lines, page R11, lines 8.32 through 9.34.
Okay, thank you, Representative. All those in favor, any discussion? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That's approved. Page R12. I think we have just one. Second paragraph, we have one change there in the House language, says statewide. The Senate does not. Senator Kubley, would you move one of those languages?
Well, since I think having something like that be statewide, Mr. Chair, I would move the House language line 8.34 to line 10.3.
Okay. Well, to line 9.33 then.
9.33, I guess.
All right. Okay, thank you, Senator Kubley. Any discussion? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
That's approved. Then we have the language still on page R12, lines 10.1 to 10.3. Members, we did not hear this in the Senate. Many of you are familiar with this agency. The House has the language in here for $100,000 for the second year for a grant to the center. Since we did not hear it in the Senate, my suggestion would be that if we decide to accept the language, that they do have a report to us, that this be one-time money, one-time funding only, not ongoing. And get a report to the legislature, and then figure out if the legislature wants to fund it from then on.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just out of curiosity, could we find out what they're going to do at the first year?
Yeah, Senator, good question, Senator Kubley. That's the House language, so folks, Chairman Hamilton, can you tell us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Kubley.
This was actually an amendment brought forward by Representative Morrow. And the Center for Rural Policy and Development, they do just that. And their funding has been cut. Initially, it has been in the jobs bill. And there is an appropriation, but once again, there's a reduction there. But it's taken substantial reductions over the years. Their focus is on rural policy and development, and that's where with the testimony in the House, because we're not only the Agriculture Committee, we are the Rural Development Committee as well. They've done some good work in the past, and they're also looking at doing some additional work here with some other organizations, whether it's Marl and some of these other entities that they're having conversations with. Once again, we have had the conversations in the House, and Representative Morrow did bring this amendment forward. It is located in St. Peter, and so it's a good entity, a good organization, one that we in the House thought it was wise to support. So,
yeah,
Senator Coobley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm acquainted with what they do. I read the stuff they send out, but, you know, I mean, so are these other groups that they work with going to supply some funding for them also in the first year? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, absolutely. They do have a substantial amount of dollars that they bring into this above and beyond what we allocate here.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Senator Coobley, you bring up some good questions. So Mr. Kanoff and I have been talking, and Mr. Kanoff, could you maybe you could suggest some language you and I have been talking about here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for a little bit longer oral amendment, but I haven't had time to get this downstairs to, typed up. But it fairly straightforward. On line 10.3, after the period, insert, this is a one-time appropriation, period. Then by January 15th, 2012, the Center shall report to the chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate and House of Representative Committees on Agricultural Finance on the planned expenditures for money appropriated in this paragraph. So you'd get a report telling you what they're going to spend the money on. And Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Kanoff,
Senator Coobley, you have to remember that this is only in the second fiscal year, so this report would come out before they could spend the dime of the money.
Yeah.
So Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Hamilton.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Coobley, I understand that you didn't hear this in the Senate. If we accept that oral amendment as a friendly amendment, would that help the senators anyway as far as supporting this, this entity? Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I would, and members, I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. Any questions?
Just move it with the language.
We'll just move that. We'll just have Representative Hamilton move this with the additional language put in.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all right. That's the motion in front of us then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, thank you. Mr. Kanoff, you want
to? Mr. Chairman, then we move on to page R13.
Start answering.
And you have the first thing here is the Senate Section 6 on farm disposal of solid waste.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
We need to address that. Yes, we're on working on it.
Okay. Do we have anyone who wants to suggest?
Mr. Chair, I'll move to accept the Senate language on page R13.
Thank you.
From 11.3 to. Should we go to 11.24, or should I go all the way to 11.32?
11.32. Thank you, Representative Amir. Would you consider it friendly if we put some language in here that said, they need to, the county recorder or register must, the landowner should report this in to get this in at a set period of time, according to testimony the Department of Pollution Control had. And so would you, I think we've been working on this a little bit too, Mr. Kanoff and I, and so we're suggesting a 30-day period of time that they would do that. Mr. Kanoff, could you?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, what I would, the suggestion is on 11.25, after the paragraph coding C, Insert within 30 days after completion of the burial, comma.
I would accept that friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
Did the pollution control commissioner, did you hear that, Mr. Kadelka, the suggested change were made? So we're adding a time frame in there, as you're suggesting this morning. Okay, he's shaking his head yes, he agrees with it. So,
yeah, Mr. Chairman. Jerry's shaking his head no.
any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, would PCA would be appropriate to have them come up and comment on
this? Do you
want
to come up and comment, Mr. Kadelka?
Making sure it's acceptable by the PCA and that, once again, this is language that the PCA can indeed accept.
Mr. Kadelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Again, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the suggested amendment. One of the concerns mentioned earlier today was the time limit that these things would be reported. We did talk to the AMC on that, and they gave us a data suggestion of time frame we passed on to the committee, and that does help alleviate that concern.
So was that a yes? Mr. You do support it?
Mr. Chair and committee members, we do support the change.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, any other discussion? Mr. Schoenfeld?
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we don't have any objection to put a time limit on, but 30 days is a little short.
How about 60?
Do I hear 90?
We're former Representative Gutnick, and we need him here to do an action. What do you suggest?
Mr. Chairman, if you guys would consider 90 days, I think that's plenty of time, but it would give a little time.
Representative Lemire is agreeing 90 days sounds very good.
What about the PCA?
Okay. Representative Lemire moves this language with the suggestion 90 days. So seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries.
You can see what goes in the
order. Yeah, if we get busy harvesting, we can't get in there sometime in 30 days.
No.
See if they do it. For the anhydrous. Oh, we're on that one yet.
It's going to take a little.
Just ask the chairman.
Sticky thing, though.
Members, how long do you think testing is going to last?
It'll be short.
An hour? I'm going to come back at 4:30.
Hour at the most.
Want to come back at 4?
Yeah.
4 o'clock.
No later than
4 o'clock or whenever session's over with for you guys at convenience. I think members, it's reached the 3 o'clock times. The House needs to go to session. So for right now, we'll recess until 4 o'clock or after if the House goes longer. So for right now, we stand in recess until 4 o'clock. Thank you.
I'll talk. I don't hear him.
Okay. Pretty much figured out.
I didn't mean to.
I am presenting.
Oh, I don't know.
All the money stuff.
But think about an hour.
Wait, that's it.
Because I don't know.
And I should have probably come back and
made that clear. A little closer.
You don't want if you're going.
Well, maybe I should
bring a glass of soda, man.
Maybe I should clarify it later.
That's the coolest one.
No, but.